The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, should Christians really be getting involved with politics? Shouldn't we instead just sit around and wait for the second coming of Christ? After all, things are going so bad and Christian freedoms seem to be in jeopardy. In no time at all, we might have the seven-year tribulation and the Antichrist, and all we have to do is get through that and Christ will return. Well, my friend, you may recall that not too long ago on this program, I did an entire program demonstrating from Scripture that actually Christians are supposed to be involved with the society around them, and yes, that even means political involvement, but there was one thing wrong with that show. I mean, just one thing. I mean, it was this program, so obviously it was brilliant and insightful and dramatic and spellbinding, but it did have one major flaw. I talked about it all by myself. I was not joined with my good friend and monthly co-host, Jim Barrier, who today is calling us from San Antonio, Texas. Now, we do want to remember to lift everybody in Texas up in prayer, but I'm happy to tell you that Jim is not calling us from a rowboat in his backyard. Jim, welcome to our show.
Hi, Bob. And yeah, we're good up here in San Antonio, and appreciate your thoughts about all of the trouble down on the coast. Houston and all of the small towns around there, it has been a pretty devastating thing down there, but all of the folks, listeners in San Diego and anywhere, can pray, and we know that prayer does change things, and prayer works. I don't know if you remember this, but when Katrina happened, that was, 12 years ago?
2005, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. I remember reading the next year in Newsweek or Time, one of those really religious magazines, and they had broke down the agencies and people that brought relief that came and helped, and it was overwhelming that the vast majority of the funding and the manpower and the help that came during Katrina or in the aftermath of Katrina were Christian organizations.
Well, in fact, there was a time when our country did not even have government welfare organizations because the church was doing all of that.
Yeah, but and I told people about that then because it was surprising to most people because it really didn't get a lot of press. You know, the ABC Nightly News and those people didn't say, hey, the Christians really stepped up.
They think we just sit around and talk about how we don't like gay marriage. Yeah. They don't think we do anything more than that.
Yeah, well, and I'm praying not only for the victims that have suffered tragedy down there, but I'm praying that this will be another great opportunity for the church to really respond and demonstrate the love of Christ in a very practical way, and whether or not the media will acknowledge it, I think it would be a great testimony, and people's lives do change, and people are affected by those kinds of things. I know this because of all the street ministry and the things that we do, that it has an impact on a person's life. If you feed them when they're hungry, they're more open to the gospel.
Well, now, Jim, I want to make sure I heard that correctly. You're wondering if today's media is going to acknowledge something positive? Can I be hearing? You sure you're not getting a little waterlogged out there? Come on, who are you and what have you done with my friend Jim Barrier?
That was probably sugarcoating.
Did you mean MSNBC, CNN, the New York Times, that kind of media?
Fake news.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, I think there's an opportunity for the church to step up, whether it gets acknowledged or not.
Well, fortunately, Christ would have us step up regardless of the media, so it won't make any difference to Christians going out and ministering to the needy.
Well, we need to do it, and I'm sure that there are already people that are mobilized and already active. Even here in our town, we're 3.5 hours from where really the devastation is, and all of the shelters and they've set up temporary places and stuff here in San Antonio. People are responding, and
you're one of the first safe havens, aren't you? You're kind of like just outside of the bad area, so
it's the only big city nearby, and so that's the other concern I have, and I've voiced this already with locals. When Katrina hit, Houston was inundated with refugees, and many of them never returned. They just stayed in Houston. And in fact, our city, we got a number of people that came from Katrina, from New Orleans. And I have a concern about people having nowhere else to go, and they're going to head to big cities because that's where shelters are, that's where there's food available, that's where there's housing, all of the things that people need just to survive. And I think the natural thing would be head on up I-10 and go to San Antonio, and we'll find some place there of refuge. And that's not a bad thing, but it will impact the city I live in, because we're already way overloaded with homeless people. And we've talked about that on the show before. You know, I do something with the church I pastor. We have quite an outreach program there, and people are doing everything they can. And I think the added number of human beings that are going to come into this area probably will impact this city. And then eventually that all, it has an effect economically. It has an effect on crime. So there's a lot of things that we need to be prepared for. And so my message as a pastor and what voice I have here is to say, people, you need to be prayed up. We need to be prepared and not caught off guard by this. And we need to be ready to deal with things in a Christ-like manner. So we
need to remember the Alamo once again, you're saying.
Absolutely.
Well, I have some good friends. They're not exactly in Houston, but they're not far. I contacted them yesterday. They were doing fine. But today they said that this is the tallest house in the area that they live in. And yet even their house, there's some kind of water system that might back up. And so if you'd all like to remember my friend specifically, my son lives in Waco. They're just fine. I called him the other day. He said it's barely sprinkling over here. But my other friends, I won't mention their names out over the air, but please. And of course, they're just serving as an example of all the people in Texas we need to be praying for.
Well, and hopefully, and we've seen this pattern, you know, when there's a major event, there is that ability for good people, American people, certainly Christian people, to rally and to pull together and help one another. And so that's what I am hoping for, that the response will be more positive than negative, and that there will be a great outpouring of compassion. And certainly Texas is going to welcome any kind of help and relief they can get, not only around the country, but even around the world. And so I'm hoping and praying that there will be a great response, but it's going to be a long, long rebuilding process down there. They can't do anything right now because everything is underwater, or so much of it is. And some of the smaller towns, Rockport, and some of those, there's just nothing left. They were just blown away. So it's a devastating thing, and it's a thing we do need to be concerned about. And contrary to what some may have thought with the intro to tonight's program, I am not a Christian who is for sticking my head in the sand, as it were.
No, and I know you wanted to talk about that topic.
Yeah.
I did, as well as we segue from Texas to politics, I did go on Facebook before the hurricane came, and I said, I have no idea how they're going to do it, But the media will blame this on Donald Trump. No matter how soon he responds, they'll say it wasn't soon enough. They'll, of course, claim that the hurricane was caused by global warming. We didn't have hurricanes before the idea of global warming became popular. And, of course, he took us out of that G2 conference, and that made things worse.
It's all his fault. Everything is his fault.
Well, just like Katrina was Bush's fault. And a lot of people don't realize this because of the historical revision, but Bush offered to declare the Louisiana area disaster, and because they had a Republican senator and a Democratic senator and a Democratic mayor, they did not want to have any help from George Bush because they didn't want to admit that they needed help from George Bush. And then everybody blamed Bush for backing off and just doing what they asked him to do. Trump's been very preemptive, and of course Texas is just a better organized state than practically any state in our union.
It is, and there is strong conservative leadership now, not so much in Houston and Harris County, but the state as a whole. We've got some pretty solid people, and no matter what we do, no matter what leadership does in a positive way, anything that comes from the Republican side is going to be laughed at, is going to be ridiculed, and they're going to spin it somehow, like you say. And you know, I'm getting so used to this now. And how long has Trump been in office here?
It's been a little over a year. I mean, a little over half a year. You know, Trump makes it easier because he speaks without a filter. But the truth is, any Republican who was our president would have been called a racist and a homophobe and a xenophobe and an Islamophobe. And they were comparing George Bush, there's nobody more mild-mannered than George Bush. They compared him to Hitler almost every single day. So if it hadn't been Trump, it would have been someone else. That's the left. They have no arguments. They have nothing to debate because they cannot make a case based on logic. So their only way of dealing with things is identity politics. That's it. They simply have no other card to play.
Well, I have said this. We're going to break. Everybody hates Trump because he beat Hillary, and the ones that love Trump is because he beat Hillary.
Well, and we just may need somebody that brash and unfiltered to smash the political correctness. We'll be right back.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. This is Bob Siegel and Jim Barrier.
Now, I know we like to play music trivia from time to time. I think we just came back in on Touch Me by the Doors.
Yes.
And going out, we had the Mamas and the Papas, California Dreamin', which my good friend Barry McGuire actually recorded before they did.
Did Barry McGuire write that song?
No, he didn't write it.
Because I know he's composed a lot of music, too.
Yeah, they were backup singers, and he actually recorded it, and then he was out of town, and so they decided to go ahead and do a take and had John Phillips sing lead, and of course it was a huge hit, and the rest is history. But I'm disappointed. Now, maybe Tim's got something waiting for us, but I'm really disappointed that we didn't have It's Flooding Down in Texas by Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I thought of that. Tim's still new, so I've allowed Tim to experience the rules before I start breaking them. Eventually, I'll come in and start saying, hey, can we do this? And we do.
Yeah.
I'm giving poor Tim a little bit of a honeymoon here before I start doing all that to him.
Well, frankly,
he's doing a great job, though. I have a feeling he'll be just fine.
He'll be great, and yeah. I love that he's playing music from my era. Right there, you know, 260s group. So,
well, and he knows it too. He's a young guy, but he recognized the Doors immediately when we played that. So I think he'll be a good trivia rival.
That's a good thing. We're going to get into this stuff here, and maybe that was a good segue. We're talking about Trump's going to get the blame for all of this stuff. Whatever happens, he's not going to do it good enough for the liberals and the media and everybody else. I kind of agree with you on, I'm glad that he doesn't back down. He doesn't give in. He's not getting a whole lot of support from anybody on either side.
Not from the Republicans, and his cabinet's in disarray. A lot of the ones that were encouraging him to keep his promises are now leaving, and it's bothering me. It seems like people are trying to mainstream him, and Trump's very pliable.
Happen.
He's very easily influenced, so I'm getting a little bit concerned, because up to now, he's kept more promises than any Republican in office, period, in this hard time. But I don't know how much longer that's going to last. And then, of course, the Republicans are such spineless wusses.
I'm pretty fed up with it myself.
John McCain just stabbed everybody in the back. And I know he's ill, and I don't mean any disrespect to that, but that, you know, saying that doesn't mean I can't comment on the fact that he went in and just broke his campaign promise about repealing Obamacare. And I know he loves to think of himself as the guy that reaches across the aisle. What are they reaching to, Jim? The Democrats' version of bipartisanship is, hey, Republicans, we invite you to do things exactly our way.
Yeah.
And then they complain that the Republicans won't reach across the aisle.
Yeah. Well, you probably saw my post after, you know, the Navy ship, the USS McCain, had a collision. And my comment was, apparently, it didn't know whether to go right or left.
I did not see that, but that's great. Yeah, there's been several McCains having crashes lately.
Yeah, because they can't take a side and stick to the side.
Yeah, exactly. Should I go to the left or... Well,
I will support the president in this way. Here's our segue, folks. Pray for the king is what we're told. We're to be in submission to the authorities that are given to us. And so right now he's our president. You know, I used to have to pray for Obama. That sounded terrible, didn't it?
Yeah, well, I prayed that Obama's heart would change, or that he would his presidency would implode. I said, either way you want to do it, God, obviously, if he changed and repented and became an honest person, that would be better. But if he doesn't, get rid of him some other way. You know?
Well, I was praying the whole 8 years that he would come to a place of personal knowledge of Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior.
Well, he always claimed that he did have that, but then there was nothing about the Bible that he resonated with in his policies.
No, well, every one of them. They all claim, you know, some background of faith. That's just what, you know, what they do. Now, we might come to a time where they'll quit doing that because it would hurt them in the polls. But
the ACLU will soon say it's unconstitutional for a president to talk about. Well, they practically do that anyway.
Yeah.
When Trump talks about God, of course, if a liberal wants to say, oh, I think Jesus would have been for open borders. Well, that's not bringing religion into politics at all.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
That's different. So I'm praying for the president, and the same thing. I'm praying that he will have a very real experience, a life-changing experience, and that that will impact his life immediately, first off, and then that will start to affect his decision-making and his view of the world and his family and everything else. And so I will pray that for every president.
Well, the good news is there are a lot of pastors around him, including our pastor here of Skyline, Jim Garlow. And Pastor Garlow has told me that Trump really does listen, and they really do have his ear when they come and talk about Christian rights and faith. So God could be working despite all this. But, Jim, there is a battle going on for the soul of our country, and I think it's going to end with another civil war. It won't be like the last one because it won't be north-south. It'll be red-blue. But that's we're having irreconcilable differences. It's impossible to just reach across and say, well, you believe that abortion is the taking of the life. I don't. You believe that you can call somebody male or female. I believe we shouldn't use words like male, female. Now, how do you reconcile something like that?
And I think you're right. I think we have been in a civil war. It just hasn't been one fought with guns. And that's, I guess my question is, do you envision a time when it would actually become a violent situation where people would be taking up arms against
It's already become violent with groups like Antifa, which folks, that's that term's just been bandied about lately. It stands for anti-fascist, and they're the most fascist group you could imagine. Fascism, by definition, is autocratic rule, and which includes the silencing of free speech to anybody who would object to this autocratic dictatorial rule. And Antifa is an organization which thinks they should violently overthrow anybody who disagrees with them. And it's in their agenda to actually overthrow the United States Constitution. They've been very violent. It's happening. They, by the way, were in Virginia. When Trump said there was violence on both sides, that's true. That doesn't mean he was not renouncing the Ku Klux Klan. He's done that 85 times already, long before he even became president. But there was violence on both sides. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
The internet site About Read was founded on the premise that a good book can change a person's life. This valuable resource offers guidance to those who wish to visit their local libraries. And now, About Read lists Bob Siegel's children's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, under the category of top 30 best action and adventure books for 11-year-olds.
Did you say 11-year-olds? But the kid in my book is 12 years old.
Bob, it's an honor just to be on the list. Be grateful.
All right, all right.
The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm joined by my good friend Jim Barrier. Jim, we were talking about Civil War, and then at the end, when we were talking about the group Antifa, started talking about Antifa versus the Klan out in Virginia. I want to make sure that nobody thinks I'm conflating the two. I don't believe the Civil War is going to have the Ku Klux Klan on one side of it. Almost 99.9% of Americans today, those on the right and those on the left, can't stand the Ku Klux Klan and thinks of them as the pigs that they are. I do think well-intentioned, well-meaning people who have conservative values and the far left are going to end up having a civil war. So I want to clarify that.
Okay. Yeah, because right now we're seeing the activity of some, you know, groups that really are a very small minority of people, but there does seem to be a split in the nation, and the elections have shown that they've all been very close as far as, you know, the numbers of people. And I know I happen to like the Electoral College. I think it's a good system. But there's an awful lot of people that voted Democrat and an awful lot of people that voted Republican. And now there's a growing number of people that are just disenchanted, and so they vote Libertarian or Independent.
Yeah, I'm an Independent myself.
Yeah, did you vote for, you don't have to tell us who you voted for.
Everybody on this show knows who I voted for. I voted for Trump. Yeah. At the time, I thought he was the lesser of two evils. However, he's grown on me because he does keep his promises.
Well, and I was going to say earlier when we got onto this, all of the attention has been on such silly things, just dumb things. And meanwhile, he's getting stuff done. He's appointing federal judges left and right, and it's fine with me if no one notices that's going on. You know,
there's a lot. He's done so much under. You know, we were talking about how the votes are close. Now, that's not the same on most issues. In most cases, when states have gotten together, for example, to vote on the same-sex marriage issue, over 30 states. Voted that down, the idea of legalizing same-sex marriage, and it was overturned by judges. So I do want to point out, I still think the majority of the people are conservative in this country, but you would not know it because what the left does now is they just get some activist judges on their side. I'm just waiting for a judge to try to make a name for himself and go down in history and claim that President Trump's pardoning of Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona was unconstitutional. Judges have no authority to do that. It sounds ludicrous, but I've seen judges do a lot of ludicrous things that they didn't have any constitutional authority to do. Yeah. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
I wouldn't be surprised either. And of course, you know, your state, we talked about the difference between Texas and California a while back, and your state has the worst of the worst when it comes to that sort of thing. So,
well, we're going to fall into the ocean soon, and then it's going to be Otisburg and Casa de Lux.
Otisburg?
I love that scene.
Movies was last month.
True.
I love Lex Luthor. I don't even know if we're going to get to our topic tonight because I'm having too much fun.
I thought you said our topic was politics. We've kind of gotten to it.
Yeah, well, except here I am talking politics all night, and I was going to bring the point of view that Christians need to be about the kingdom of God, and we are sojourners in this land. We're pilgrims. Our citizenship is in heaven and all of that kind of thing. Which I believe all of those
which
things,
is true, but none of that means we don't get involved in the political system at all.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to, you know, maybe bring up a little bit. And then how do we, what's the way for a Christian to be involved? Certainly I can't endorse everything that the Republican Party, or for that matter, almost any candidate out there. I can't just say, okay, whatever they do is fine with me, and I back it up, and I endorse it, and he speaks for me. I don't know who that elected official would be right now.
We need to remember, when we go to the voting booth, we're not electing Jesus Christ. So usually when I hear the criticism, for example, of Trump, it's his personality, it's something dumb.
That's all it is.
And I say, look, I want to talk about his policies. Frankly, I don't care what his personality is.
Yeah,
I elect politicians because I'm hoping that they'll do the things they promise, and I'm hoping there'll be political pressure for them to do the things that they promised. The only perfect person is Jesus Christ, and his kingdom is not here yet. Well, it is here in the church, but it's not here in the sense that it's not ruling the world.
Yeah, not a political kingdom. Now, you know, interesting concept there, because I remember seeing just about every election, but down here in the Bible Belt, because we're in the Bible Belt, bumper stickers that people have on their car that says, "Vote the Bible." And so I facetiously say, I didn't know the Bible was running for office. And I know what people mean. And basically they're talking about two things.
They mean morality of the Bible.
Yeah, they're talking about same-sex marriage and they're talking about abortion. That's really the two hot buttons. Because vote the Bible would also entail being honest, truthful, just, not stealing, not lying. Here's a lie.
Well, there goes Washington. Is anybody left now?
Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. So if there's a tax, as a Christian, pay your taxes.
Exactly. And we need to remember that even if people don't like what our tax dollars go for, and I don't like a lot of the things our tax dollars go for, you got to imagine, what did the Roman tax dollars go for? On the other hand, I have seen people use that to the point where it became an excuse. For example, there were pastors who lived in places like Holland that were conquered by the Nazis, and you had some people like Corrie ten Boom who would challenge those around them to stand up. And other times pastors would say, "Oh, well, the Christians say that we obey the law." Well, there's a point where we are not to compromise with evil. And we need to understand where that point is.
And, you know, and it's in, I think it's in Acts chapter 4 and Acts chapter 5, there are two situations where Peter and the people with him, when they were told...
They were commanded to stop preaching the gospel.
And they said, "You decide whether we should obey God or man." So
exactly. And when Daniel was told that prayer was against the law at all in Babylon, he opened his window so people could make sure they saw him pray.
Yeah. So sometimes we do have to go against what they say.
Exactly. It's a balance. We obey the law up to the point where we're completely violating our conscience by obeying. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. As a Christian apologist, I hear scorning and ridicule all the time from Bible skeptics and unbelievers. Some churches will still respond to such people with love and understanding. Others do not.
"You Christians are such morons. There's no proof that God exists, and only a pea brain would believe in miracles. Wake up! Step into the 21st century. Besides, Christianity is responsible for most of the world's problems."
"I find your lack of faith disturbing."
Relax, my friends. That's not the kind of response you'll get from Skyline Church. We welcome you just as you are, with all your doubts, all your questions, and all your concerns. Your problems with religion are understandable, and I promise at Skyline you'll experience the love of Jesus Christ, not the revenge of a Sith Lord.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
shouldn't be involved with politics. This is Bob Siegel discussing this provocative topic with Jim Barrier.
Well, obviously, Christians should live and let die.
Okay. So what you're saying is Christians should embrace the first James Bond movie with Roger Moore.
Roger Moore. There you go. Yeah, live and let die. And Paul McCartney.
Paul McCartney.
Did that song with, really, I think it was one of the things people were skeptical about a Beatle doing a song for a movie like that.
Yeah, I believe it was still a John Barry composition, though, although I would have to double check on that.
No, I believe Paul wrote that song.
Oh, that's true. The Beatles aren't going to sing a song they didn't write themselves.
No, too much money. Yeah. And George Martin was really involved in that project. So, and he still does that almost always on his tour. He always does that song in his performances with the pyrotechnics and stuff. He loves that one. Now back to what should we do as a Christian? How should we then live? The great Francis Schaeffer once asked. We were talking about the place where if the law of the land is in conflict with the law of God, now you have a dilemma. And there really should be no dilemma. We must obey God rather than men. And you mentioned Corrie ten Boom. Well, she went to prison.
She went to a concentration camp for resisting.
And so I ask my congregation this periodically. If things go bad in this country and you are asked to renounce your faith, or if you don't, you may lose your business, lose your family, lose your life, whatever. We don't know how far it could go. Are you prepared to take a stand and say, no, I will not renounce my faith. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in God. I believe in the Bible. I believe the things that are taught there. And that could come at great cost. If the civil war that you have talked about really gets full blown, Christians could be put on the line.
Absolutely. And we've got to be careful, because when we say we can't compromise with the law if it violates our conscience, that means to the point where it's something serious that we know is commanded by God or commanded by God not to do. I can't say, well, I think it's stupid that the speed limit is 60 miles per hour, 65, so I'm going to go 80. Okay, you're not violating your conscience by obeying the speed limit, even if it is a stupid law. But when they're actually telling us, where I draw the line, Jim, is when we are being claimed to give some kind of communication and assent to something that as Christians we know is not true.
Yeah.
When they tell a baker, you must bake a cake that celebrates a gay wedding, even though you don't believe in that. And the baker isn't saying, I'm not going to sell a cake to a gay couple, which is the way they try to portray it. He's just saying that's a work of art. That is an expression. And you can't compel me to express something that I do not believe. So we draw our line in those kinds of places.
And there have been people that have already paid the price.
Yes, that's already starting to happen.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. You know, I wonder, rank and file, the church members, the people sitting in the pews that are paying for all this stuff, where will they be if there is a radical change and it becomes basically illegal to espouse the Christian virtues and to proclaim them? I wonder where church attendance is going to go.
Oh, I can answer that. Putting aside the liberal churches that went off the deep end long ago anyway and do nothing but mimic what is the latest politically correct thing in the news, the evangelical Christians who claim they believe in the Bible, the moment the government starts telling them that they're going to lose their tax-exempt status if they don't adhere to this or don't adhere to that, all of a sudden we're going to have pastors who have epiphanies. So you know what?
Yeah,
I think Jesus Christ is about compassion. I have no problem performing gay wedding. I think they'll knuckle just on the point of losing their tax-exempt status, let alone if we reach the point where the government says people are going to go to jail. So I think some of those pews will be empty. I think some of those buildings will be closed down. I believe the high minority of evangelical Christians will take a stand. And I just pray when I say that, I don't say that easily. I say that saying, and I'll say this in front of everybody, I will pray to God that he will give me the strength and the courage
to take a stand. That courage can only come from God, but that's what just exactly what he would be calling us to do.
Yeah, and I'm afraid I agree with you that that's what, you know, hypothetically, that's how it would go. And then I'm thinking then there's going to be some of us that will say, I'll surrender my Bible when you pull my cold, dead finger off its pages.
Little paraphrase of Charlton Heston and the Charlton gun Heston, control there.
God bless him. But I never until just recent years, months even, really thought that this would happen in my lifetime and that the potential is really there. I knew we had a rift. I knew there were people that disagreed on things. You know, I have friends that still, you know, they believe in the, you know, liberation theology kind of thing. And then, you know, people that are ultra-conservative, both of the extremes. But there just seems to be so much pressure. And what you're talking about with pastors, it's already happened. I'm hearing pastors backpedal all the time. And I think you're right. They're afraid of losing tax exemption. They're afraid of, you know, losing members, losing money. And that's a shame that that's the case. You know, when we had the thing here in our city, they passed the law at one point about bathrooms and preference and who could use what bathroom, and you couldn't have a men's room and a women's room and blah, blah, blah. And my good friends from the Justice Foundation, Alan Parker Jr. called me, said, are you prepared? I said, prepared for what? He said, well, you know, what if they come after you? I said, what are they going to come after me for? And he said, well, how many employees do you have? I said, none. Oh, well, do you sell do you sell books or tapes or recordings of your messages? No. Do you sell any products? No. Coffee? Do you sell? No, we don't sell anything. So you don't sell anything in the church. You don't have any employees that you pay.
They may still go in there and tell you to stop taking the names men and women off the bathrooms, though.
You know, they can't take anything from you. You don't have anything to fear. So, but I'm not where most churches are at with all of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be back for one more segment. Bob Siegel. Buying or selling a home? Feeling overwhelmed? Facing what seems like unlimited choices? Believe me, your first and most important step is to find the right person to represent you and look out for your interests. Somebody who will help you save money while buying or make money for you when you sell. So listen carefully as I offer the best housing advice you're ever going to hear. What you want to do is contact Realty Executives All Area, and you want to ask for my good friend, Fred Falduti. Fred has managed literally hundreds of real estate transactions in the San Diego area and has handled just about any scenario you can imagine. Believe me, folks, you don't want to navigate the landmines of this economy without a skilled and experienced guide. But Fred is so much more. He will look after your interests as if they were his own. Give him a call or contact him online. Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
The much-anticipated sequel to The Dangerous Christmas Ornament is finally here, Inside the Castle in the Glass. Mike Owen is now in high school enjoying his new girlfriend and his new popularity. But life gets interrupted when a series of mishaps transfer him and his friends into a whole new world, the very world his mysterious Christmas ornament originated from. Inside the Castle in the Glass, available on Amazon.com and barnesandnoble.com.
Jim, earlier in the show on this discussion of whether Christians should be involved in politics, you talked about how you will pray for the king. And of course, that passage is found in 1 Timothy chapter 2, to pray for kings in high authority. One of the pushbacks I get a lot of times is you say, well, you didn't see the early church voting. You didn't see them involved with politics. They had no opportunity, except for rare cases where somebody like the Apostle Paul happened to be a Roman citizen. Yeah. And as a Roman citizen, he did know how to work the system and make sure his trial went before Caesar. Yeah. But the same Paul, when he commanded people to pray for the king, and I think sometimes this is one of those subtle things people don't get, he was encouraging them to have as much political involvement as they could possibly have, because he gave two reasons for praying for the king. He said, one, that we might live a peaceful life. That's interesting. Yep. That shows that contrary to popular opinion, persecution is not good for the church. Now, Paul experienced much persecution, and if we go through persecution, we need to just be willing to have courage and trust God. But we're not supposed to seek it. We're supposed to do everything we can to avoid it. And so praying for the king could allow us to live a peaceful life. That tells us God wants us to have a peaceful life ideal. But the second thing is, it says there, this is good and acceptable in the sight of God, our Savior, who wants all men to be saved and come to a knowledge of the truth, which means not only does God want us to have a peaceful life, but a peaceful society is more conducive to the spreading of the word of God. Now, if this same Paul were able to tell people in a different culture, you can go to your voting booth and not only pray for who your king or governor is going to be, but have something to do with who your king or governor is going to be, don't you think he would have said that?
Oh, I'm pretty sure he would, and I think he might have felt the way you and I feel when we look at the numbers, and the small percentage of people who are qualified to register that never register, and then the people that register but never vote, and you wind up with a very small percentage of people making the decisions for all the rest of the country. That's one of the things that's bothered me more than anything about our election process. I think you're right. I think if everybody went out, voted their conscience, got educated, and understood what was going on, and they voted according to their conscience, I don't think there would be close elections. I think things would change. But for whatever reason, there is this paralysis of apathy. And I've had people say to me, I've had Christians say, what difference does it make? I'm not going to vote because it doesn't matter,
Do they mean ultimately we're going to be in heaven with Christ? Sure, but what kind of society do we want to leave to our kids and grandchildren?
Yeah, well, or Keith Richards for that matter. But I have grandkids, and that's a great concern for me. What kind of culture will they grow up in? So we have some big problems, I tell my congregation all the time, I don't tell them who to vote for, but I'll tell them, if you need some help understanding what a person stands for, I'll be glad to fill you in.
I'm sure that even though you don't tell them, by the time they hear their values, they probably know who you'd like for them to vote for.
They probably know. And if there's measures on the ballot, I'll tell them, I'll explain to you what yes or no means when you vote. You know, I'm pretty happy about the fact that we have, in our very small congregation, I have registered many, many people who have voted for the first time in their life after being members of our church, and it's the whole approach that we're talking about tonight. It's, you do make a difference, and you have a voice, and so use it. But I do not make endorsements, I don't put signs up, and I don't do block voting, as I know some pastors have done with their churches, and they get their entire congregation to all vote the same way so that they can sway a local election. I refuse to do that, but I do want people to be conscientious, and I want them to be educated, and understand that, you know, we're the salt of the earth. And part of what the church is supposed to be doing is preserving this world from corruption.
Absolutely.
And so I do live that way. And you know me, and you know our people. We are very proactive. We don't just talk about it and sing about it on Sunday. We're doing stuff throughout the week to try to make a difference in people's lives. Would that every evangelical church in this land could get a hold of the notion that it isn't just professionals who do stuff. It's the rank and file members. It's the normal, everyday common.
Well, the word minister people. In the New Testament is used of everybody. It's not this unique people called the clergy.
Oh, we've just so profaned that whole concept, and it is a big problem. Not just with the Church of Rome, but with many of the church lines in the evangelical community. It's we pay people to do the work, and the rest of us, we'll just sit and get entertained, and that's a tragedy. I don't know if I've got time here. I'll tell a quick story. We do a soup kitchen. We serve on Wednesday nights. We feed people, homeless people, and they come in, well over 100 a week, come in off the streets. And it's all volunteers. People come in and they cook dinner and they serve dinner and clean up and do all of this. And I was visiting friends of mine who live in your city, and they said, "Well, how many of your Sunday morning people actually come out and help?" And we never sat down and thought about it. So we got a piece of paper out and wrote it down, and we came up with 25 names. Now, that doesn't sound a lot, except that I only run about 30 on Sunday morning.
Oh, there you go. It's the high majority.
Yeah, and this friend of mine goes to The Rock there in your city, and I said, what if 5/6 of the congregation at your church got actively involved in serving in San Diego? How do you think that would impact San Diego? It would change the city. and I know The Rock does a lot of good things.
Oh, of course it does. It's a wonderful church.
And so does Skyline. But I'm just saying, the church as a whole, if we mobilize and said, let's get out there and let's live like we say we believe. Let's make our compassion tangible.
Yeah, I agree. Compassion, and also it is our responsibility as Christians, part of compassion is standing up and speaking out against evil, because when we speak against evil, we are standing up for the defenseless.
Absolutely, and that's throughout not only the New Testament, but the Old Testament. That was part of the responsibility of Israel, was to take care of people who could not defend themselves or could not take care of themselves. We're supposed to be compassionate to the needy. That's what justice is really about, in my mind. It's making sure that people are not victims of injustice.
Exactly. We serve a God of justice and mercy. We all need his mercy, but he also wants us to stand up for justice.
I agree with that. And so, as usual, Bob, you brought me around, and it only took an hour.
We always get to the topic sooner or later.
By the way, we had earlier, I missed this, we had Love is Blue.
By the great Paul Mauriette.
Yeah, and so I thought, well, why didn't you do Red Rubber Ball by The Circle so that you could balance out the division between the red and the blue
audience? There you go. Just shows you need to move to San Diego so you can help us with our musical selection.
I think you're right.
Well, my friend, I know that your city is not one of the ones badly hit, and I'm very grateful for that. But like you said, there's going to be a lot of homeless people coming your way. Mm-hmm. We are praying for the state of Texas and California.
We appreciate that.
Especially since a lot of us in California may have to live in Texas someday, because it's getting unbearable to live in California. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Bob Siegel.